Judy Rebick supports Rabble because
Rabble's one of the very few spaces anywhere that you get a variety of views. All the new movements that emerged in Canada, whether it was Idle No More, the Maple Spring, the first place they appear is on Rabble.
Thanks, Judy. Just a few reasons to support Rabble.ca. Go to www.rabble.ca/donate.
This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Ears on the Earth, Rabble.ca at the World Social Forum. Well, here we are at the World Social Forum Media Center for one last time. I'm Victoria Fenner, you're listening to Ears on the Earth, and I am here with
Sophia Royce
and Campbell McClintock
and David Kattenberg,
also known as the team that's been bringing you these podcasts all week. So the World Social Forum isn't over yet. There's still a couple of days to go. It's Friday today, though, and sadly, we have to say goodbye. But before we say goodbye, there's been a lot of stuff happening at the World Social Forum around the environment. So we're going to dive into that right now. And so, Sophia, you're talking about the LEAP Manifesto. So can you tell me, first of all, we're devoting almost an entire program to the LEAP Manifesto. So what is your thinking around, you know, what is so important about LEAP that we're giving it a whole program?
I think the reason we're spending the whole day talking about LEAP is because it's an intersectional movement, and there was a lot of conversation today around how to include labor movements, indigenous communities, and the international community in the movement to divest from fossil fuels, to switch from an extractivist economy. And that's really why we're going to spend most of today, all of today, delving into the LEAP.
Okay, so what are we going to listen to first?
So this morning, Sophie and I attended a conference called Making the LEAP, a conversation, and it was hosted by Avi Lewis and Naomi Klein. They're joined by a panel of prominent Canadian activists that included Mike Palachek, Bianca Mugeni, Ellen Gabriel, and Maude Barlow. And it was a really interesting conversation about the intersectionality of the climate change issue, and each of them spoke from a very particular perspective that added a lot to the conversation.
First up, you're going to hear from Ellen Gabriel. She's a Mohawk activist and artist, and she started by welcoming the audience and the panel members to Kanasatake territory. Here she is talking about how the LEAP Manifesto can do better to include Indigenous communities.
Segum. Segum. Wat kun waratus katitsa kos na yun chats tanu wagen yahtu. Kanya kahaga gen do ta tanu kana sadaga gen agare tanu ahad ka taso ka tum zoni ti ti tin waratus ne ne ka sats na sers oyera sungwa tetsu tanu agwe gud the water wat kun waratus tika so wat kan sa aran ki ka cho chake
Greetings, and my name is Ellen Gabriel. I'm Gatitzagos in my language of the people of the Flint, and I'm Turtle Clan. I greet you and welcome you to our territory, and on the people of the Flint's territory. And I just wanted to also acknowledge all our relations and all the life cycles that allow us to be here. I first became interested in the LEAP Manifesto at being at the meeting that Naomi had organized in Toronto. And it kind of reflected the things that Indigenous peoples have been saying and have been urging the United Nations for many decades to do, which is to be kinder to the earth so that the children and future generations will be able to enjoy a kind of lifestyle that we take for granted. One of the things that we have for us as Indigenous people is our whole identity is based upon the land. Whether it's our healthcare system, we go and pick medicines in the forest, eating. For us, we have the three sisters, the corn, beans, and squash, which we call Junhequa, which are the sustainers of life, and nutritionists only in recent decades discovered that eating those three together make a complete protein. It's the kind of traditional knowledge that I think that the LEAP is open to including in its work, and I think that's what appeals to me as an individual and to other Indigenous people. We have been, I think, for me, what I see with this is a rebirth of the humanity of Canada and those who were concerned all along about the environment and realized that the first peoples of this land have been concerned about the land and the environment and the kind of legacy that we are leaving behind. And it is true that Indigenous people have contributed least most to the greenhouse gases that we see. But the traditional knowledge that we have in regards to how we can move forward is important to be included. And I'm really happy to see that the LEAP also supports the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. Recently, when I questioned several ministers and people in the bureaucracy, the bureaucratic culture that won't change regardless of what government is in there, and asked about the implementation of the declaration, and they said they're not ready. And you know, we're still going to rely on one of probably the most practiced racist policy in the world, which is the Indian Act. Which has marginalized and victimized Indigenous women and their families for a long time. A human rights-based approach is extremely important. If Indigenous people are going to be part of any kind of movement for the environment and for human rights, an understanding and education of what colonization has actually done to Indigenous peoples is an important part of moving forward. We are part of the environment. We have always been part of the environment. As I mentioned when I introduced myself, I'm Turtle Clan. You know, that means I have relations who are turtles, not just human turtles, but the ones who you know, with the hard shells. Maybe we have the harder shells than they do, but these are the kinds of things that Indigenous people, at least in the Americas, no, that's part of what we know. And when we talk about human rights, we also are obliged in our Indigenous ways of being to also speak for those who cannot speak. And those of you who are living in urban areas are now seeing the animals come out, animals that you never saw before. Just like in Florida, the alligators are all over the place in people's backyards. Why? Because the alligators' habitat has been taken. For condo development, for capitalism, for the greed and the need of people who want too much. And a green economy includes thinking about all our relations. All those birds, all the four-legged ones, the trees, the medicines, the plants. For me as an Indigenous person, and I know others as well, if we are going to move forward for a green economy, for justice, it also includes all our relations. You know, the UN has called upon all states in their framework for climate action to cooperate. And that in cooperation, they must at the most help realize the utmost quality of human rights. And so we don't need to reinvent the wheel here. What we need to is wake up the people, reinvigorate the minds. The mind is an important part if we're talking about justice and a green economy. The mind is an important part because it's about education. It's about having an openness and a willingness to give and take, accommodate, to respect, to have compassion for those who don't have, to understand that we as consumers need to rethink and reevaluate how we consume. And that we demand that companies like Apple create a more sustainable and more respect for the human rights in the products that they create. And every single Microsoft, whoever, because we are all using cell phones. And where are those things coming from? And what about the light bulbs that we use, which are supposed to be greener? I accidentally broke one last year, and I saw that it had mercury in it. So these are the kinds of things we need to be evaluating when we as consumers buy products. When we as consumers, as people, think about what we are leaving behind. Because those babies, those little babies right now, have no clue of what they're going to be in for when they become our age. We are leaving them something of a problem to take care of. And I know there are goals of 2030, 2020, 2050. I don't know if I will be around anyways. But I certainly hope that the efforts that we do in collaboration and cooperation and respect of each other will have an impact in the future. Because this is what it's about. What we do today impacts the future. And so I think I'll end it for now, because I know we have a lot more discussions to do. So, yeah, go on.
You really get to speak on the side of the field, not
in the. That was Ellen Gabriel. At the end of the conference, I spoke with Bianca Mugeni about the LEAP movement and her role in it and why Canada needs to be a leader on the climate change issue.
So I was brought on board about a year ago to help launch the LEAP into kind of the stratosphere and gain a lot of public support for it. We did that in a bunch of different ways. We got in touch with a bunch of high-profile kind of Canadian cultural and political figures to help kind of bring this message from the people that had been written by, you know, grassroots groups back to the people. And it was pretty successful. I was there to help bring on groups of support. So there's now 200-plus groups that have endorsed the LEAP Manifesto. That was a part of the work that I was doing in conjunction with the team, was just building support for this brilliant document that... that social movement leaders had built. So my role is to build support for it, to get the word out about it, and to build the movement around it as well, which is really the stage that we're in right now, is a stage where we're trying to get people involved locally, sectorally, and also intersectorally, right? And really get people to locate themselves as activists within this movement to build the kind of numbers that we really need.
What's the significance of the fact that the LEAP movement is being founded in Canada?
I mean, we started where we're at and where we're from, and I think that with activism, that's always a really important thing to do, is to act where we have the most amount of power to affect change. We launched it during a federal election, because that's when people talk about politics. It was a very somber time in Canadian political sort of history. We'd had 10 years of Harper. We're now in a very different moment with the Trudeau government, but we need to keep building. The significance of Canada, we're significant in so many ways. I mean, where to start? I mean, we are, in terms of housing the tar sands, for instance, it's a country that needs to be having a massive and intense discussion and debate around our role, both domestically and internationally, with respect to carbon and the contributions that we're making. They're disproportionate. And we're also at the forefront of extractive industry around the world as well. And, you know, that is also causing massive inequalities. And one of the things that we try and do with the LEAP is to make it clear that all of these issues are interconnected, right? The climate crisis, the economic crisis, inequality, gender and racial exclusion, they're inextricably linked. We're talking a lot about decolonizing as well, and the fact that we really need to address our history of colonialism, our colonial legacy. And Canada has a lot of work to do. You know, we're not a country that necessarily sees ourselves as needing to fix a lot of problems. We have a long way to go to meet our climate commitments, and that has a huge impact on the rest of the world. And as a global citizen as well, like we can be leaders, right? We don't have to be climate criminals. We can choose another path. We can tell another story about who we are.
What has been your strategy in approaching oil industries and people in that interest group and converting them to the LEAP movement?
Well, we've been working with some really interesting groups. Like there are oil sands workers now that are doing a lot of work to sort of invest in the renewable economy so that there are jobs for people who want to transition out of really sort of carbon intensive and heavy work. And a big part of what the LEAP is calling for is for massive investments into retraining for people who are in very carbon-heavy work. And also, we very much understand the low carbon economy to be things that are much more than, you know, putting up solar or wind turbines. It's also the caring economy. So that's daycare work, that's teaching, that's hospital work. It's artists, it's public interest media, and these are also the kinds of jobs that are underpaid, often quite gendered, and under attack through the mentality of austerity.
And how can social media best be used to reinforce the LEAP manifesto and to broadcast the message nationally and internationally?
Well, I mean, I think providing a platform would be very useful, not only for the LEAP manifesto, but for projects that are happening across the country where people are pushing for justice-based transition away from fossil fuels. Those can be specifically LEAP projects, but beyond. We see ourselves as very, very connected to the climate justice work that's happening and that so many people are involved with. But in terms of specifically amplifying LEAP work, probably the best thing to do is to actually just keep abreast of the work that we're doing, check out our own social media. We would love to build that out and sort of get on our mailing lists and to just pay attention to the work that we're doing.
That was Bianca Mugeni.
Now, at the end of the panel discussion, the formal panel discussion, Avi Lewis opened the floor to participants and audience members to critique the LEAP Manifesto. He was very frank and said, you know what, the LEAP Manifesto doesn't include everyone. Tell us who we've forgotten and how we can do better and move forward. So I caught up with him a little bit after the panel and asked him his perspective on the LEAP Manifesto, what the next steps are, and how the LEAP team can include all the communities they may have left out.
We're just on the cusp of the one-year anniversary of its launch. It is truly staggering how much the document has enlivened people in Canada, how much elite bombardment we have received, an attempt to crush any momentum that the LEAP was developing completely backfired, because at the end of this period of all-out corporate media abuse of the LEAP Manifesto and vicious mischaracterizations of the document, we had more support and more supporters and more Canadians who knew about it. So we are in a period just now where we approach the first year anniversary of the launch of reflection. We've taken a minute over the summer to meet with our tiny team, and we're taking the next few weeks to really start consulting with this huge coalition and 200 organizations. We're trying to call every single one of the organizations that endorse the LEAP Manifesto to really consult deeply and widely on what should happen next. We've got a whole lot of ideas, many of which came out in the seminar, to go much deeper on the policy side, to create a structure where people can create their own to support the creation of local LEAP groups. There are dozens and dozens of local LEAP groups across the country that people are self-organizing, but we have knowledge to share, and we need spaces and tools so that people can self-organize in ways where we build institutionally rather than everybody inventing it from the ground up. And there are specific sectors where we know we could go a lot deeper, particularly in working class, marginalized communities, in the exploding Black Lives Matter movement in Canada. Black Lives Matter Toronto was one of the initial signatories, but as that movement has just gone supernova, we haven't had nearly as much contact with them, apart from attending their rallies and, supporting them. We haven't had nearly as much exchange with them as we would like, and many, many other movements. We had a suggestion today from Ellen Gabriel that we should be spending time on reservations, doing workshops with young people. We're going to have to raise a bunch of money and hire more people in order to have the institutional capacity to do that. And we're excited to get started on that work. So it's a time when everything is possible for the LEAP and everything is in play. And, it was a big coalition that came together in writing the document, let alone in signing and endorsing and launching it. And right now we're taking care of the need to really bring people with us. It's not our document. It was an expression of a huge spectrum of social movements in Canada. And the Little Leap team that has tried to keep organizing is not the Leap movement. Nobody gets to claim that. We want to make sure to absorb as much as we can of where people want this to go, so that we can continue to serve those social movements that found that expression in the Leap Manifesto document. But clearly it's changing in lots of different directions. And there are people doing Leap-related stuff all over the country that we haven't even heard about yet. And that's the beauty of creating a truly democratic tool, which is what the Leap Manifesto is always meant to be, that people can just pick it up and use it. And our main work is still to just let people know that it's there so that they can do what they think is best with it.
Okay, and for those of you listening who weren't at the panel today, there was a question from Naomi Klein posed to the audience about how the LEAP and the LEAP team can better involve caregivers, educators, and there wasn't too much put forward in terms of how the LEAP can change with and address other sectors. So do you have any ideas on that?
Massive numbers of ideas. We would love... And we are going to organize more among teachers and healthcare workers, daycare workers, and caregivers. The entire caregiving economy, one of the most poignant parts of the LEAP Manifesto for me is the identification of the existing low-carbon economy. Those very sectors that have been under systematic attack for decades of austerity and the logic of austerity in our country, those are the very sectors that we need to grow. Not to shrink, not to diminish, not to cut. And so it is that huge sector, sectors dominated by women of color, who are caring for each other, who are caring for us. And that, I think, is a very fruitful territory for planting this more holistic vision of transformative change in Canada. And starting with identifying that form of work of caregiving as the necessary core of a caring economy and of a transition beyond fossil fuels. And so we need to reach many more people in those fields. I did a workshop with Toronto teachers last month in their environment committee to talk about elementary school teachers and how they can use the LEAP in the classroom. A teacher who's talking about translating the LEAP into kid speak, so that, because it's a little bit high blown, the language, you know. And so we've made some contacts with teachers, but I think we have huge potential and lots of work to do in the caregiving fields. And the caregiving economy, I think, is an idea that has the potential to really catch fire and help form new coalitions of people who don't necessarily see themselves in the same struggle. But when we bring a climate lens and an inequality and a transformational change lens to some of these sectors, you see enormous potential for mobilization. And so, yeah, so we got our work cut out for us.
That was Abby Lewis.
Okay, so now it feels like a historic moment and a really sad moment for us to be closing down our coverage here from the World Social Forum. And I know for me, from my perspective, it's you guys have been the dream team. You have been wonderful to work with. You've been enthusiastic going out there in some of the worst heat I think that we've had all summer. Like, talk about climate change. This is a shape of things to come, folks. So why don't I just go around here and just, you can all say your goodbyes now, but I really, really like to know, like, what are the big takeaways for you?
David Kattenberg, I'm struck by the diversity of interests and commitments and movements that make up this huge a community of social activists from around the world that who attend the World Social Forum, an enormous amount of expertise and astonishing commitment on the part of individuals to the various causes that consume their lives. And it just, I suppose, brings home to me the crucial aspect of unity. And perhaps it's a bit of an irony that, you know, the World Social Forum brings together, you know, 50,000 people, tens of thousands of people in order to create a global movement. But I guess the challenge is that there are so many people moving in different directions. I mean, we all share a common view of the world. I take that back.
With nuances, yes.
With nuances. No, we don't all share a common view of the world. But it's a challenge bringing people together. And to the extent that we achieve a certain amount of unity and bringing people together and connecting people, something's been achieved.
Yeah. Campbell, what do you take away from this week?
What stood out to me the most at the events that I went to was how important it is for everybody to pay attention to other people's issues. So everybody is here representing mostly issues that they cannot really afford to ignore because either it's oppression they're facing or violence they're facing. So all these movements really need to come together and recognize each other and acknowledge that we're all trying to achieve the same ends. So I was really inspired and motivated by people speaking from a passionate place and encouraging each other to work collectively.
Sophia.
Well, I'm reminded of that quote from Anya Kovacs. It was during our first episode. If you haven't listened to it, go back and check it out. And she talked about a certain sense of despondency in activist circles and in activist organizing. And I have to say, this week proved that to be false for me. I interacted with a lot of people who are quite hopeful. I would say it's a combination of love and rage going on here at the World Social Forum, and I can only hope that will propel us forward into a better, more sustainable, more just future. And I also learned how to do a podcast, so there's that.
And as for me, I am feeling like I want to cry. It's like, I'm serious. I am really, really very choked up about having to say goodbye to all of you. I think it's been a wonderful experience personally, but also too, it's like this kind of communication is just so important. And the thing is, there's a lot of things happening at this forum, a lot of things we weren't able to get to. But, you know, it's like our job as communicators is crucially important. And so, anyway, big group hug, everybody. And I really, really hope that we can do more of these kinds of things and get our ears out there and writing stuff and doing other kinds of things for both rabble.ca and also for other kinds of publications that share our view about what is important in this beautiful and broken world. Now I am going to cry. So for...
I'm Sophia Royce.
And I'm Campbell McClintock.
And I'm David Kattenberg.
And I'm Victoria Fenner from Ears on the Earth, a rabble.ca production, signing off for the last time from the World Social Forum.